Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho State Tax Commission won't release Amazon.com tax deal information. Moscow School District looking at possible high school construction bond in upcoming years. Montana legislature plans to fight back against ISP browsing information sales legalization on a federal level by denying state contracts to internet service providers who sell personal browsing data. And we'll hear from Patricia Carrick of Doctors Without Borders speaking about the politics of fear in the Ebola epidemic at the University of Idaho's Borah Symposium today. All coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A spokesperson for the Idaho State Tax Commission says the commission will not release details of a tax deal the state made with internet commerce giant Amazon.com. The deal, which went into effect Saturday, allows the state to start collecting sales tax on items sent to consumers in Idaho by Amazon. The Associated Press reports Tax Commission spokesperson Renee Iman would not discuss how much sales tax revenue Idaho expects from Amazon, nor what, if anything, the state offered Amazon to get them to begin collecting sales taxes. A statement by Iman released through the governor's office says, quote, "All we can say is that Amazon has a seller's permit effective April 1st, 2017. Any information beyond that is protected by the Idaho taxpayer confidentiality laws." Tax Commission member Rich Jackson told the Spokesman Review website he's heard legislators estimate the sales tax would be worth between $15 and $30 million per year from Amazon. Jackson said, "We were pleased to see Amazon do it because we didn't want to be the last state that's proactive for the taxpayers of Idaho and Amazon and everybody." The Idaho Falls Post-Register reports Republican Representative Janet Trujillo of Idaho Falls has collected $6,400 in living expenses from the state under a program that helps pay for lawmakers' maintenance of second homes near Boise, all the while living with her new husband, House Majority Leader Mike Moyle of Star. The two legislators married in December. Lawmakers who live farther from Boise are allowed $129 per diem to help with second residence payments, while those who live near Boise only receive $49 per day per diem on top of their salaries. The paper also reported on a Facebook post that supports their suspicion of double-dipping, in which Trujillo said under a picture of Moyle's ranch in Star, 16 miles from the Capitol, quote, "Feeling fantastic with Mike Moyle. Good morning from my little piece of heaven." Lieutenant Governor Brad Little issued a statement yesterday in favor of Governor Butch Otter signing the bill repealing the state's 6% sales tax on groceries. In a press conference yesterday, Governor Otter refused to say whether or not he would sign the bill passed by the legislature last month. Little wrote, "Repealing the grocery tax is just one component of the type of comprehensive tax reform Idaho needs. The reduction in the unemployment tax on businesses and finding a way to lower Idaho's income tax levels, among other things, are what I hope the legislature will continue to evaluate. Idaho's economy is strong, but not every community is feeling the full effects of our growth. Idaho's economy faces many challenges, including a difficult tax climate when compared with our neighboring states. Montana, Wyoming, Oregon, Washington, and Nevada do not tax groceries, and Utah taxes groceries at a lower rate than its general sales tax. This repeal would quickly make Idaho's tax code more competitive." Little will be a candidate for governor in 2018, as will former Republican State Senator Russ Fulcher, who ran against Otter in the 2014 primary and who represents the Tea Party faction of the Republican Party. Boise physician Tommy Ahlquist and homeless man Troy Minton of Boise also will run as Republicans. Minton was a successful plaintiff in an American Civil Liberties lawsuit against the city of Boise, which threw out Boise's anti-solicitation ordinance, which was aimed at the homeless population. The 42-year-old lists a homeless shelter in Boise as his place of residence in his candidacy papers. No Democrats have announced their intention to run for governor in 2018 so far. Otter is in his third term for governor and is not expected to run again. Meeting in Jackson, Wyoming last week, federal wildlife officials said a final rule to take Yellowstone ecosystem grizzly bears off the endangered species list will be released as soon as June, and wildlife experts said the grizzly range in the area has expanded. The population of grizzlies in the demographic monitoring area has gone down from 750 to 690 in the last 2 years, but interagency grizzly bear study team head scientist Frank Van Manen said the Yellowstone grizzly's range has increased 11% in the same period. Van Manen told the Jackson Hole News and Guide, "Since listing, there's no doubt that we are now at a point that we have the largest population size." Center for Biological Diversity attorney Andrea Santasierre told the Associated Press she's concerned as grizzlies travel farther afield, hunting may become policy. Santasierre said, "We are made to believe that hunting and management are synonymous. I would say that they're not. Agencies here are touting a recovered population, and we got where we are today without hunting." Montana became one of the states to move forward with legislation protecting internet users' browsing histories after President Trump signed legislation yesterday that would allow internet service providers to sell that data. The Montana Senate yesterday unanimously passed a budget provision that would prohibit the state from awarding state contracts to companies that collect data from customers without their consent. Minnesota and Illinois are considering similar laws. Republican Montana Senator Ryan Osmunson of Buffalo said, "It has become apparent to us that they have the ability to use your information in ways to market to you and, quite frankly, sell that information. We're basically saying they cannot do business with the state if they're collecting personal information without the consent of the individual." The 46-0 vote in the Montana Senate means the provision will go into effect once the full state budget passes, unless it is removed before then. At the University of Idaho's Bora Symposium this afternoon, Patricia Carrick of Doctors Without Borders focused on how fear-based decisions threw roadblocks in the way of ending the Ebola epidemic in West Africa, which started in 2013. Carrick said because fear dominated over rational planning in many cases, populations were decimated or destroyed, vaccine trials were fast-tracked, health workers died, and untested medications were used in controversial ways. Carrick focused on how the health of all citizens of the world is interconnected.
Fear is present among us. That is a lesson learned. Let's look at that. Let's recognize it and let's say, so fear must be managed. For most international actors, the motivation to action in the Ebola epidemic was not compassion. It was the fear of the intrusion of that infectious disease into their own populations. That fear is real and inevitable, and perhaps that is the appropriate responsibility of civic government. I may not agree with that, but there are many who do. So, part of the responsibility of a government is to protect its citizens. Let's accept that and say, how can we then harness that energy to initiate and deploy cooperative, preventive, and interventional plans, policies, regulations, agreements, before epidemics break out, before we have a crisis, while we can still think with our brains. Countries must be convinced that it is in their own self-interest to respond early and at the source of disease outbreak. And there are some global agencies, this one among them, beginning to come together, or agencies that have previously been established that are trying to bolster their strength, their passion, and their abilities in order to intervene in the future. We are in a polarized and contentious world that is nonetheless, maybe even against our will, interconnected in millions of inexplicable ways by trade, travel, by our own self-interest, and by repulsion and fascination with others. The politics of fear pervade the global health agenda and emphasize crisis management and disease containment. Our media and our minds race from one outbreak to the next. If we are to survive, we'll have to change from the politics of fear to the politics of solidarity, based on global responsibility toward the health of all. Outbreaks are not simply natural occurrences. They are the result of disastrous socio-political conditions. Ebola did not break out in a setting of a functional health infrastructure that became devastated by disease, but occurred in a devastation of inadequate health infrastructure without the capacity for independent response, identification, containment, and treatment. It is the reality of our times that a huge proportion of the world's population lives in just such settings. It is that condition of deprivation and inequity, and not the endless sequence of individual disease outbreaks that seem to beset us, that is the true threat to global health security. And it is that condition of deprivation and inequity to which we need to apply our energies, our attention, our resources, and our creativity.
That was Patricia Carrick of Doctors Without Borders speaking today at the University of Idaho's Boris Symposium. Carrick was asked about the obligation a country like the United States has in helping stop the Ebola epidemic across the ocean in Africa or improving overall health across the globe.
Still out there in the world, whether you're in a resource-poor or a resource-rich setting, more people are dying of heart disease and the complications of it, stroke particularly, than anything else. Which we're happy to export, right? And other countries are too, yeah. I think that although non-communicable disease is not communicable by virtue of its definition, that doesn't mean that the effects of people dying of preventable disease is not something that affects us. And I think that sense that we are all interconnected, not separated, that everybody needs access to health care, everybody needs potable water that won't cause waterborne disease, everybody needs adequate shelter. These are things that we share, and if we don't tend to them, I'm not really an alarmist. I don't think that the ravening hordes are necessarily going to arrive on our doorstep, but the effects will be there, and we're already seeing it, you know, that we have less credibility, we have less potential for collaboration. Resources don't get shared in the way that would be the best for humanity. And somehow opening our perspective to that sense of interconnectedness, even if the disease itself is not communicable, I think is really essential.
That was Patricia Carrick of Doctors Without Borders speaking today at the University of Idaho Boris Symposium. The Boris Symposium is organized each year by the UI's Martin Institute. It's in its 60th consecutive year. The symposium seeks to support the causes of peace and outlawry of war. The symposium concludes tomorrow with two presentations. One will be on the role of international NGOs and academic institutions in mitigating local conflict. This will be held in the Vandal Ballroom and presented by Green Empowerment Executive Director Andrea Johnson of Portland at 11:30 a.m. The evening keynote address will be A World Gone Mad, Polarization in the Age of Globalization, presented by former Obama Administration National Security Council member Robert Malley. That will begin at 7 p.m. in the International Ballroom. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, a chance of sprinkles after midnight tonight, cloudy otherwise, low 39, 20% chance of rain before noon tomorrow, cloudy high near 58, 40% chance of showers Wednesday night, mainly before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 42, 70% chance of showers, mainly afternoon Thursday, cloudy high 59. 60% chance of showers, mainly before midnight Thursday night, mostly cloudy, low 42, and an 80% chance of rain on Friday, with showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon, high 56. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. KRFP citizen journalist Colin Parks assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Coming up next, we have our weekly documentary from Making Contact. That'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Music begins at 7:30 with a Tuesday night grab bag. Have a good night.
KRFP is supported by
Panhandle Artisan Bakery, baking naturally leavened bread using local ingredients. Panhandle Artisan Bakery is located at 630 North Almond Street, Suite 110, and panhandlebread.com.
KRFP is also supported by the Environmental Defense Institute, actively engaged with issues involving the Idaho National Laboratory, a Department of Energy nuclear site. EDI advocates for environmentally sound nuclear policy decisions.